Hi, I'm Spencer.
And I'm Blake.
And you're about to get jumped.
Welcome to a very special episode of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, a weekly podcast where we watch the anime so you don't have to.
But you should still totally watch the anime.
This week on Get Jumped, we're not exactly watching anime, but instead we're watching the first handful of episodes of the brand new Netflix live-action adaptation of One Piece.
Yeah, you gotta go. Gotta go. Set sail for One Piece of Netflix property doesn't suck. Finally, for the fucking first time, we are going to watch a good live-action adaptation.
Well, we'll see about that.
Go fuck yourself. Anyway.
So this week, I don't know how long it's in theaters, but Jurassic Park was in theaters because it's the 30th anniversary. So yeah. When you say, gotta go, I just think of the lawyer running to the bathroom before getting eaten by the T-Rex.
Also, apologies while we're recording. This is not going to be like a super long episode. I am still relatively fatigued at most times because I got Yay. Sick with the COVID.
You got the itis. You got COVID again?
Yeah, man. It sucks.
That does suck.
I've been sick for like a week, and I'm still not fully better yet. So
that sucks.
Stay away from work, which is just rough.
According to a recent NPR episode, there's like a new variant of COVID going around. So it might be a good idea, listeners out there, to keep those masks handy if you start to feel a little under the weather, or if you're in close proximity to somebody who seems to be. It might be chill to, review some of those COVID protocols real quick, just as a little extra layer of protection, because, things are about to start getting chilly, which is when COVID really thrives, and with the new variant running around, kind of the same deal as post-vaccine variants. It doesn't seem very dangerous if you've gotten vaccinated, but it still sucks. It's still sick.
So I'll tell you the most annoying thing about it is that in order for me to go back to work, I have to be like straight up like 24 hours clear of having fever. And this particular thing, it's like it gives you like fever at night. And that
does it give you fever when he touches you? Fever all through the night?
So
fever.
So apparently I'm hopefully like almost clear and gonna be able to go back, but it's still making me feel the grossness. So
I have one more thing.
If I'm like coughing randomly or sound weird, I apologize.
Well, and I was going to say one more thing before we get into it, is you put a post into our Discord. We've got a decently active community and kind of a core group of people in the Discord that talk to us. It's really cool. If you are listening to this, you're not in the Discord, I highly recommend it. It is not a super active Discord, so it's not going to blow up your phone constantly throughout the day, but there are just little pockets of conversation that spawn that are really lovely with some super cool people. And when Spencer put in a post there that was like, I've been sick, our regular release schedule has been affected by the fact that I'm too sick to record an episode, and we feel really bad about it, but we'll do our best to get you something. And like, multiple people chimed in to be like, we don't care because we like you guys so much. I got the vibe that it was like, we are ride or die fans of the show, and we're just going to be excited whenever you drop something. And I really appreciate that. Well, we try really hard to keep to as much of a regular schedule as we can. But obviously that's been a struggle, what with sicknesses and babies and travel and holidays and all the kind of like crazy life stuff that keeps getting, well, work schedules, rehearsal schedules. It's hard to find time to do this in the margins of a life that doesn't really account for it. So I really appreciated seeing that, that just sort of like casual affirmation that like us missing a couple of recordings doesn't make you pull your hair out. So sorry to the people that I'm sure there's a couple of listeners out there that are like, release one a week, but like, we're doing our best. And for everybody else, we really appreciate the understanding and support.
Yeah.
One Piece.
Anyway, let's talk about One Piece.
If you are listening to this podcast and you don't know what One Piece is, it's a pirate anime, and now there's a live action version of it, and it's a fantasy world, and the story cadence is kind of our heroes visit different islands, they get embroiled in the culture and stories of the people on those islands, and then they move along to the next one. And so it's got a sort of focus in on this type of story for a little while vibe, and then it moves on to whatever the hell else it wants to do. And that's One Piece.
So that's One Piece. Originally, it was a manga. It's one of the
longest. It is a manga. Mangas.
It's one of the most one of the longest running mangas, I believe, ever.
I'm actually going to pull it's up
by
the...
Oda, which is one of the greatest manga creators of all time. And he, in tandem with Netflix, released the One Piece live action show. And I say in tandem, truly this time, because I thought it was going to happen the same way for Ichiro Watanabe when he released Cowboy Bebop. And the problem was that apparently Watanabe had sign-off basically on creatives, which is why the live-action Cowboy Bebop is beautiful, but he did not have final sign-off on the scripts, which is something that Oda learned from, and he decided that he wanted final say on the script. And I can say with certainty, after watching all of 7 episodes already, it came out on Thursday, I think.
Yeah, there's 8 episodes total. They each clock in about an hour.
Yeah, so I've watched 7 episodes so far.
I'm halfway through 5.
Trapped in bed and, and watching things. Thank God I've had something to watch.
Yeah, a full day's worth of content, basically.
Yeah, and you can really tell that he signed off on the way that it is written, because there are so many moments that are just like panel for panel from the manga that are not word for word, but they still have that, like, the way that, like, cadence to the way that the characters speak inside of the manga that really will remind you of the manga and the anime. And I appreciate that probably more than anything inside of the show. Also, we have to have a full-on conversation about 3 actors in this show, because I believe that all of the actors in the show do a, if not passable, good version of these characters. There are 3 that are fucking all-stars, and I don't know if you've gotten to all of them yet, but the first one, and probably the one that should be pointed out the most, is the actor that plays Monkey D. Luffy. He does a great fucking Luffy.
I'm glad to hear that, because for me, I think it's fine.
Really? I feel like the way that his character is done is it's less extreme as like a Luffy character would be inside of the anime or the manga. He's more like toned down and less ridiculous. However, inside of the way that he is portrayed inside of the show, he is like a great protagonist to move forward.
Let me go ahead and agree with those, and it's the toned down. I was kind of hoping to see him not quite as big as anime, but a little bit closer to the anime version than
like
this actor
else
is doing.
Of the anime and the manga is like a drawn character, so they're more, you know, bigger than life sort of things. Luffy, in every sense, is basically a cartoon character that has been thrown inside of an anime and manga. So he's
and
more toned down than that, but still, he's fun-loving, and his actor portrays him with like a lot of love, and you can tell.
Yes, I think for me, Luffy is larger than life. And the live-action One Piece is not larger than life. So they kept the ideals of Luffy, which are the important part. And when he, as a shonen protagonist is wont to do, he routinely states his ideals. He'll say things like, don't come after my friends, that kind of normal shonen protagonist fare. He is on it and he sells it. And because he's doing what I believe the production, the director, the writing, I think he's doing exactly what he's been asked to do. So this is not me making a comment against that actor's performance, because I think he's doing what he's been asked. I just was hoping for him to be asked to be a little bigger, like the anime version, and he's not. But because it's stripped down, he's doing a really good job selling that performance, and it is still recognizably Luffy. He's just not quite as big in the way that I find a lot of charm from Luffy comes from that bigness, and he's got the carefreeness, but not necessarily the bigness.
Yeah, and I think he starts to lean more into that as you go in through the first season.
Like I said, I'm halfway through episode 5, which is where they go to Baratie, or Baratie, as they're saying.
So you have met my second favorite fucking actor in the show so far, which is the guy that plays Sanji. Holy shit, he's good.
I haven't seen enough of him to have an opinion. You are correct. I like what I've seen so far. I like that the actors are very diverse as far as, like, they have different accents. It is a subtle way to make the world feel big. Like, they're not all talking exactly the same as each other because they're from different places, and that's smart. There are also people who are cast, like, Usopp is cast as a black man. Which is, he's not, I mean, he is white or Japanese, depending on how you interpret anime characters. And I'm not actually sure how Oda intends these characters to be interpreted, but Usopp's definitely not black in the manga or the anime, but he is here. So you get a little bit of that diverse casting from the perspective. I mean, even Luffy is Hispanic. Nami, I believe, is white. You've got a Japanese man playing Zoro, and then I think Sanji is also white. So there's a pretty decent amount of diversity among that main core crew cast as far as, like, real world diversity. But what I think is working even better for me is that they clearly come from different places in our real world, and they are encouraged to speak in a way that is legible to English viewers, but that is true to their own accents. Let's take Kobe. Kobe is Australian. Kobe speaks with an Australian accent. Like, Kobe's actor is Australian, and Kobe has an Australian accent because they were like, you're Australian, just be that. And it just gives the world this, like, big feel to it that's really cool.
Yeah. I have honorable mentions before I say number 3, because I could not go without mentioning the rest of the crew, because Usopp is, the actor that plays Usopp is fantastic. The actor that plays Zoro is fantastic. The actor that plays Mihawk is great. Garp is so likable inside of the show already. But I would be remiss if I didn't say how there are, like, no other female characters that have been introduced inside the show, really, other than Nami. And she is great in this show so far.
She's the best one, I think.
She is really, really, really good at, like, portraying that. I would call it, like, an Oda-ness to the way that the actors are coming across, where, like, they have a little bit of soap opera, which is just something that just happens in anime and manga.
Anime is melodrama.
The way that Oda writes emotion is extreme and over the top. When they are laughing in the manga, they are laughing their asses off. When they are crying in the manga, they are weeping and wailing. When they are eating, even, and enjoying food, it's like the most happiest holiday feast of all time. And the way that the character that plays the actress that plays Nami portrays her is like this deep well of emotion, and, like, not having, you know, complete understanding of, like, what she should do in the moment, but you can tell that she is, like, a well of thought coming up with different ideas inside of the moment and figuring out what she should and should not do, is just, like, that actor fucking nails the way that Nami is portrayed inside of the manga, and I was just like, just so overwhelmingly impressed by her so far.
I would say too, Nami is in danger of being snarky cool girl. She's got a little bit of a not like the other girls vibe. And she's very snarky. And as I'm watching this performance, there's a lot of times in the way that she talks and the cadence of her speech and the sort of crackliness that she puts onto some of her words where I'm like, this is a girl that you see at conventions a lot. Like this is that sort of nerdy girl who is a little tomboyish because she's been into things that are usually popular with boys and not really marketed at girls, like anime, card games, whatever. And so, sorry.
And cartography, you know?
But like in real life, when you run into this girl, she's like tomboyed a little bit. She's very sarcastic. She's a little over it. And she's just like, it's just one of those like sort of common personality types that you'll see a lot. And I was like, I've met this person multiple times. But that's a very surface level description. Like that's the trope, and tropes are great. Like this actress for Nami is playing into that trope. For me as a viewer, I kept being like, I've met this girl. We've had an interview with girls like this that are like professional voice actors. Like this is the type of girl you see in like nerdy spaces a lot, that is dealing with like fanboys that don't necessarily have good social skills. And she's like navigating, you know, for lack of a better phrase, she's navigating those waters. What I love to see as an actor here is even small moments and single lines that should be like little throwaway jokes. She, as an actor, is clearly putting in work to fill those. So you can see that like there is a rich inner life in this person. This is an actor that has put a lot of thought into what is going on inside Nami's head, because even the early episodes of this hint at the fact that Nami has a couple of things going that are maybe not all working together with one another. Maybe she's part of the crew, maybe she's not. Maybe she likes these people, maybe she doesn't. Maybe she's going to stay with them, maybe she won't. Maybe there's something in her past that she hasn't revealed to us. And there's this sort of like complicated contradiction to the character. But I think for some of the people in the show, you're not seeing quite as many like gears turning in their heads as they speak and act as you are with Nami. But it's being so well done that like it doesn't feel like you're watching somebody try to piece something together. Like it just feels like a character that has a lot, like a character that is really thinking things through from multiple angles simultaneously as they are acting. And I really, really love that. I think she's the powerhouse in the main cast. I would hard agree with that. I would say Garp is great. He's giving a very strong performance, and it was really smart of them to cast that actor because he has such an intensity and presence on screen that he instantly imbues that character with importance.
Also, he has a uncanny way that he has figured out the way that Garp is angry but also laughing. And I'm just like, it's just so fucking uncanny, but so good. Like,
he's a really good actor.
That moment where he's just like fucking guffawing and also screaming while he's like destroying his office. Just like, oh my god, you cannot tell. It's like that actor exercise where you're supposed to go from laughing to crying, except for going from rage to laughing to rage to laughing. And you're just like, it's just, it nails it. And
he's really good. Job. So many complex characters are doing two things at once. You know, they are happy, but it's tinged with remorse or whatever. And he's selling that. Nami is selling that. Luffy is not selling that most of the time because he's not being asked to. But they have I think that's something about the writing here, is that they really have distilled a lot of stuff down. And so, like, they're able to piece together moments of his past in ways that do bring that out. And I do think the actor does a good job with it. But that was just an example of, like, Luffy is a little bit more of a surface level character. And so most of the time he's sitting at the surface. Zoro is very much wearing a mask of being a surface level character. And so, like, for me in the show, you've seen a little bit of backstory, and you've seen it make him more determined than he usually is, but he hasn't really, in the episodes I've watched, he hasn't had a chance to show a crack in that mask yet. That said, I fucking love the mask, and I can watch it all day. The way the actor just delivers these sort of, like, rapid-fire, monotone, totally disinterested lines is absolutely hysterical and gets me laughing all the time.
Yeah. I would be remiss to not mention as well one of the actors as well that has done a really, really good job so far in his character, as his character is very ridiculous and very, like, extreme, oh, yeah, but also very well done, which is the actor that plays Buggy the Clown.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He does I was convinced that he was fucking Nick from Britannic. I looked it up and I was like, okay, well, but he does a fantastic job of being just, like, completely unhinged like Buggy. He's less ridiculous than Buggy is inside of the manga and the anime, but he is still just, like, putting on a obvious facade of somebody that is, like, full of insecurities.
Yes, he's got that big... He's a good killer clown. I was like, oh, they're clearly pulling from live action portrayals of the Joker, which is absolutely appropriate for this character,
yeah,
where you have that sort of, like, all of the clownishness is tinged with sadism. And it's like, yeah, he's wearing this clown garb as, like, a, I don't know, safety blanket so that he can be a bad guy or whatever. And the actor is, like, chewing the scenery at the exact appropriate level. He's big and fun and charismatic while still being intimidating. It's great. He's great. I say the casting overall is really good. Kaya stands out. She's excellent in this. It's really good so far. The chef dude with the funny mustache on Baratier, who I have not seen much of yet because I'm only halfway through that episode. But, like, yeah, he's great. The casting has been really, really good. I would also say, the visuals are pretty good. The CG is pretty strong. It is hard to make a guy that stretches look good, and they do their best with it here. I still think it looks inherently ridiculous and sort of inherently fake, and I've thought that here. I thought that in those original, not that great Fantastic Four movies. I thought that in Multiverse of Madness. I was like, I'm so glad to see John Krasinski here as Mr. Fantastic, and he still looks dumb when he stretches. And that's, I think, part of the reason why you see him stretch for, like, a second, and that's it, because they haven't figured out how to make it look okay yet. Not great here, but they use it sparingly as sort of, like, exclamation points at the end of moments, and that's smart.
Yeah, I will say probably the best fight choreography that they have leaned into in the show so far has been the swordplay. It's really beautiful swordplay, especially the actor that plays Zoro, the way that he is doing just great, great work. The battle with Mihawk that you haven't seen yet
is looking forward to that.
Well done. But I mean, like, even the fight sequences between, like, the Black Cat Pirates is really, really good too.
And I saw a review mentioning that a lot of the action here is done in the style of, like, a wushu film, such as, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or even moments of Everything Everywhere All at Once. I would agree with that. It has that sort of, like, frenetic, almost dance-like quality to the action, and that is a very smart way to do a live-action anime adaptation, because a lot of anime is standing looking at each other and talking about your special moves and then doing your special moves at each other, and that is so cool on the page or in the animated form, but it's not going to work in live-action, and this is a really good adjustment that feels true to it. And I think that, for me, is my big takeaway. I remember when I was in French class growing up in high school, I took a lot of French class, and one thing my teacher would say over and over again is that when you're translating from French to English, from English to French, from whatever language to another language, you're translating not word for word, but thought for thought. And that is, I think, as somebody who has seen most of the episodes we're referencing here, I've seen every episode of what the live action content that I've seen, and I recognize those characters and those places and those moments, except for some of the stuff with Kobe. I did not know the big reveal about Garb and his relationship with one of our heroes. I did not know that, and I was floored. but that was huge. So that was cool. I was excited to see. I think they're bringing in some stuff with Kobe, and I assumed Kobe was going to come back later, so I think that they're probably front-loading that or maybe translating that to make Kobe a more present character. Love that they've kept Helmeppo. That's hysterical. But like they are translating thought for thought. They know what Oda is doing, what he's done. They've had Oda's input into this, and they're using that to really craft a lovingly recreated version of things that has been focused through the lens of 1 hour episodes. And it's so well done.
And here's, I think, the most important thing this show does right. Because it's not just about the writing, it's not just about the actors, it's not just about the world or the CGI or the fighting or doing a good adaptation, finally, of a manga slash anime. But the most important thing to me is to get fucking correct the feel that this group of actors and characters has, which is that feel of like a loving crew that actually you can see why they spend time with each other and care about each other. And there is this moment that you feel it for the first time, really, really feel it for the first time, which is when they're going to sit down inside of the floating restaurant. Uh-huh. And there's that great joke where Zoro like is trying to sit down but also have his swords, and he can't do it on one side, so he moves to the other side, and he still wants to like remain and look cool. And they're just having like this back and forth of all the different characters. You can finally see that Luffy and Usopp are just going to become best friends immediately. You can tell that like Zoro begrudgingly respects everybody at the table already so far. You can also tell that like Nami, as much as she pushes away already to like not become attached to these people, is becoming attached and starting to kind of like fall in love with her, like her, you know, her brothers that are around her. And you can just like see all of those moments starting to come together. And it just makes you go like, I'm, this is why you love One Piece, at least for me. Which is that the characters that are introduced that are part of the crew, they are never left behind. The way that they are portrayed inside of the manga, in every single chapter, that the way that Oda does this, is that every character has a moment and an arc and is not just a placeholder to be sat in the background and for you to forget about while you pay attention to the other main characters. They're all important, and they're all like a crew, and you're supposed to be interested in everybody. And I'm like, that is what I think this show does the best so far, is that it makes you like start to fall in love with like them as a crew. And I'm like, this fucking nails it.
Yeah, I think it really does. I think I obviously live action anime adaptations, a lot of people have been talking about a curse. And it does sometimes feel like there is a curse. I felt this most intensely with Cowboy Bebop, because the lead up to it was people care about this, people are familiar with the source material, they're looking to do a faithful adaptation, and then it seems like pretty much everybody agrees that they missed that mark fairly significantly.
And everything but the visuals.
Yeah, and this... this is that. It is the look of it. It is the feel of it. It is an accurate, faithful portrayal. It is not going to be every moment, but it's actually a surprisingly high number of direct translation moments that are, like I was saying about the wushu, it's not that those fights aren't happening. It's just that they're happening in a way that works for live action. And so there's still those fights. They're definitely stripping down. Like, they don't fight all of Buggy's crew. There's definitely stuff that's taken out. Because most anime like this, most battle anime, is like, let's introduce the villains and then let's fight through them one by one, sort of pairing up our heroes against our villains, having sort of like everything stops while these characters have this fight moments, and then moving on to the next one. And that's kind of the cadence of shonen anime that works really nice. And it just doesn't make any sense for live action, and they twist it here to fit live action in a way that feels totally seamless and totally faithful. It's a really, really good adaptation. I think it'll be interesting to see how they go forward. I was reading some reviews on IMDb. People mentioned the fact that, like, these first 8 episodes cover huge chunks of story in each one. They're kind of doing all of the early setup chapters. And the Usopp one takes 2 episodes. The Buggy one takes 1. I don't know. They're kind of speeding through it without feeling like they're speeding past things. The pace is fast, but it's appropriate. They feel like they're hitting everything important without not giving it its appropriate amount of time. They are throwing in some extra stuff, like Garp, who I don't think I knew him as a character from the One Piece that I've seen. So putting him here makes a lot of sense. If he was introduced, it was very briefly, and he probably came back later. So they're front loading a few things from later, I think, to give the live action actors more stuff to do spread out in a way that doesn't always need to happen in an animated or drawn form. They're just adapting it very, very well. And if they keep up that pace, they will actually be able to do an impressive amount of story over the course of 8 or so episode seasons, because they're doing like entire story arcs in 1 to 3, maybe 4. I don't know. It seems like Baratier is going to be sort of the rest of the season. So they're going to do that for 3 or 4 episodes. If they do story arcs that fast, I mean, they'll be able to advance on the manga relatively quickly. There's still challenges that come with live action, with the fact that your actors are going to age, that they're going to have contract complications, and et cetera. So I hope that the show doesn't collapse under the weight of practical challenges like that. But a couple more seasons of this would be dope. I'm just over halfway through with the show, and I'm already lamenting the fact that there's only 8 episodes. So, yeah,
and what I will say is, like, the biggest hallmark of it being a good show so far too, is that it is being hailed as a great adaptation from both people that watch the anime, just are anime fans, and from a lot of critics that are just like, I've never watched anime before, but this is good. And I'm just like, yeah, it is. Like,
it is good.
It's just good content.
It isn't always great. It is occasionally great, but it's very good. It's very fun. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to say that before we sign off. This is good. If you like One Piece, you're probably going to like this, or at least a lot of this, because it is a good adaptation. If you don't like One Piece, specifically, if you've never read it, if you've never watched it, if you feel intimidated by it, according to that IMDb review I read, this is a crash course in the first 80 or so episodes of One Piece. It's everything you need to know in an 8-hour, 8-episode chunk. It's very digestible, but I think this is good for non-anime fans. Yeah. It's definitely goofy. It's definitely big.
That other people agree with us.
Yeah, it's not going to be for everybody. Just like not everybody likes Lord of the Rings, not everybody likes Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not everything is for everybody. But if you've got a person that might enjoy a sort of larger than life fantasy adventure, I think they're going to like this, because it's good and it's fun and it takes itself seriously when it needs to, and it has a laugh when it needs to, and it's just a good, good time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I hope they make more soon.
Yeah. So, stick with us after these credits, and we'll talk about what's coming on next week.
Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is made by Forever Summer Productions and presented as part of the Geekly Grind Podcast Network.
Sound editing is done by Rashad English. He's our level 15 sound wizard. Beep.
Fireball. Ad-free versions of our podcast are available on Patreon, along with extra Patreon-only goodies, like additional conversations and articles written by the hosts.
Follow us on Twitter at @BandSGetJumped.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BlakeAndSpencerGetJumped.
Or talk to us on Reddit at reddit.com/r/getjumped.
We also have a Discord server, and you can find links to that on our social media platforms.
If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. Reviews help other listeners find our show.
New episodes come out every week.
Thanks for listening. Next time on Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, we are theoretically returning to our regularly scheduled programming with Naruto Shippuden episodes 209 through 211. And some more Star Wars.
Blake gets shot out of a cannon, you know.
Oh,
it's the new COVID being shot out of a cannon. Okay. He came down with it recently. It comes with being injured. Mostly bodily, but also spiritually.
That sounds right.
Burns all over his body.
And my emotions.
He's got burns all over his emotions.
All over my feelings. All right, watch One Piece.